We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway.
Get up or get out the way, Trae Young.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We're part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. As always, I'm here with Jason Pat, and we have a special guest joining us today. The man formerly known as Cosmos on Twitter.
What?
Now he is Brian J. Draft, perhaps the godfather of the draft, the godfather of all drafts. He's going to be discussing his draft children with us on this evening episode, one day before the lottery. It's Brian S. What's going on, Brian?
I can't believe you outed my extremely well-hidden secret like that.
I was just asking myself, I'm like, should I say his name? I don't know. Anyways, thank you for joining us, dude. We're going to be talking about the draft. We're going to be talking about the Bulls with... Wow, I should really have this off the top of my head. What is it, like a 20.8%
chance? 20.3, I believe, is what it is.
20.3% chance of landing a top three pick. That's going down.
Top four.
At the lottery tomorrow night. Ending a top four pick, of course. But, we're just basically going to hit on some of the top prospects, who we would take, how we would rank the prospects if the Bulls were to land in each pick. And we're going to be talking a little bit about the Bulls' second round pick as well, because they have number 38. But first, let's touch on the playoffs, because... I don't know how you guys feel about this. I have loved watching the playoffs. Obviously, the injuries totally suck. I find the Kawhi injury to be uniquely heartbreaking because I really felt like it was setting up for Kawhi to just like power his way to another finals MVP and really like embolden his legacy and whatever. But it does level the playing field for sure with Kawhi out. So we're left with the Bucks versus the Hawks. Unbelievable. That the Hawks are in the conference finals and the Suns already have a 1-0 lead on the Clippers. So all of this is shocking. I can't believe the outcome of either series in the Eastern Conference. Sort of the big piece of speculation that's come out of the Eastern Conference playoffs is what do the Philadelphia 76ers do with one Benjamin Simmons? Ben Simmons, absolutely brutal, especially throughout the last three games of the series. Versus Atlanta. I think he took three field goal attempts in the fourth quarter throughout all seven games.
Correct.
I believe he combined for 19 total points across the last three games. He looks like Chuck Knobloch out there.
Worst free throw percentage ever, I believe, in a playoff series or a playoff run, something like that.
32% from the foul line or 33% from the foul line. Had the famous play in game seven where he passed up the wide open dunk. Joel Embiid called it the turning point in the game.
Yeah, bus tossed by Doc and Embiid.
Doc said that, he didn't know if he could still see Ben Simmons as a guy who could be the point guard on a championship level team. So now, obviously, everyone's trying to trade Ben Simmons. And it's tough to trade Ben Simmons. But as NBA writers around the web have tried to do this, one name that has consistently popped up is Zach LaVine. So there's been a chorus of Bulls fans that have said, no, we're not giving you Zach LaVine for Ben Simmons. I agree with it. I think there might be some recency bias at play there because Simmons's value has never been lower. If we were to have this conversation, Zach Fitzsimmons, a year ago coming into this season, maybe these answers are wildly different. Of course, Zach got better. Simmons has a little bit of Lauri Markkanen in him where he just doesn't get better on the offensive end. On the defensive end, he has gotten better. On the offensive end, not so much. So my question for you, Brian J. Draft, is do you have any interest in Ben Simmons on the Bulls? Do you think that there could be a way to land Ben Simmons in a multi-team deal while keeping Zach, keeping Vooch? And Ben Simmons, we've been tracking him since he was a prospect. How are you feeling about the Ben Simmons experience these days?
The thing with Ben is I still think he was probably a positive factor in that series because he's an excellent defender, screen setter, all this stuff. It's just the vibes on that team are awful. Like they had no confidence in him. He had no confidence in himself. He just completely he Rick Hank healed it. He Chuck Knoblocked it. Like there's no other real description. There's no other real way to categorize that. I would have no interest whatsoever in trading LaVine for him. It's not even necessarily because I think LaVine is better than him. It's because unless they're getting like a first round pick or something, we all understand that that means that Kobe White's going to be having the ball like a lot. And I don't want that. I would not like that to happen for the Bulls. There's no way they're going to be a playoff team if Kobe is the number two scorer next to Vooch. Like that's just not going to, unless we can physically restrain Billy Donovan and have him swear under punishment of jail that he will involve Patrick Williams in the offense all the time, I'm not interested. No, thank you.
Yeah, so I would like the idea of Simmons if you could get him next to Vooch and LaVine. Then I think it would be interesting. And, there's some people who would still be against it just because Simmons was such a liability on the offensive end of the floor in the playoffs. But, the Bulls are going to need, I think, big power athletes with a defensive mindset next to Vucevic and next to LaVine if they're really going to maximize that pairing. There's no one better in that regard than Simmons, who's a tremendous perimeter defender, impactful defender at the rim as well. Mm-hmm. He can handle the ball. The Bulls need a point guard. He could somewhat sort of fill in that need for facilitating. An issue with Simmons, though, is that he should be a terrific rim attacker, given his physical attributes, given his relatively tight handle, especially for his size. But he's so worried about getting fouled when he goes to the basket that he doesn't really want to attack the basket in full force. So, I've heard Bulls fans say, I wouldn't even trade Patrick Williams for him. I wouldn't trade Kobe for him.
I would trade Patrick Williams for him.
People are going a little bit wild on this, on these Simmons takes the other way, but certainly a fascinating player. And I do expect him to get moved.
There's no way he can come back to this. I mean, he got buried by Embiid,
the Embiid thing is the big one. Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's just I feel like he just can't come back from, he just needs the fresh start. I mean, he talked about how mentally he was just fucked this series. I mean, and just his admissions about the playing and the excuse for the pass, whatever last night was that he thought Gallinari was going to follow him. It was basically he was coming over my back. Like, dude, you are 7 feet tall. Just go up and dunk it. Like Trae Young was under the basket, clearly worried about the foul stuff. And the free throw shooting stuff is super weird because there was a good piece also today. I think I'm not sure how to say his name. Yaron, former SB Nation guy who wrote the process book at Fox Sports, had some good old stuff from Simmons. Just I know there was that video going around from Summer League where he was shooting jumpers. Obviously, this Summer League video, you don't want to look too much in that, but he was at least taking jump shots and making some. And his free throw percentage in the as a rookie, I think it was 70% on five or six attempts per game in his first playoffs as a rookie. But it's just the regression. We talk about Lowry regressing and not getting any better. That's what Simmons, it just hasn't gotten better. It's gotten worse. He admitted the mental stuff. So it's just where is his head at? Does he just totally need that fresh start? It seems like he does. And so trading him for this point does seem you're trading him lowest value, but so many teams could still use him. I do agree that people are going way the other way. I've tweeted about this stuff and people have been, no way you trade for this guy. No way the Bulls should do it. It's you trade for Ben Simmons. If you don't give up, if it's putting him next to Vooch and LaVine, that team's going to be fucking real dope in the playoffs or in the regular season, at least that's guaranteed very good regular season team. The playoffs.
The other thing. Yeah, I just realized also, I know we mostly like the new regime. We don't hate the new regime, at least. Yeah. I still don't know if trading for a guy with sports psychology, mental problems, on the but and putting him on the Bulls is necessarily going to fix anything.
Yeah, who knows?
We all remember we remember Summer League Wendell, and then we had Bulls Wendell, and didn't go great. It's kind of remarkable that he seemed to be almost immediately cured of that when he went to the Magic. Like, he just needed to go somewhere else. So
yeah, I guess that's what you'd hope with Simmons, I guess, just getting out of Philly, fresh start. I mean, they were obviously booed off the court last night. Like, there's just so much vitriol towards him right now. So
I think there's a Simmons trade that works really well. And I'd be really interested to see if this particular team pulls the trigger, and that's the Thunder.
What's the trade? What do you got in your head?
Kemba. And one of those first, maybe a protected one for Simmons, and then maybe some flotsam.
That's such a shitty trade for Philly. But you know what? Philly's at the point where they almost can't win a Simmons trade.
Yeah,
they can't win one.
They need Kyle Lowry, but they may not get Kyle Lowry. I don't know if that's gonna work. So Kemba can do anything. And thing is, their training staff is a lot better than it was. Embiid is not. You don't really count him. I saw people asking how he's playing through a knee injury, and it's he's been playing through knee injuries for
ever
10 years now. He knows how to do it. He just ignores pain. That's what he does. Yeah, man. The Sixers. The thing is, I really, as much as I like making fun of Sam Hinkie, I really don't like this process revisionism. Because the process worked fine. It's not keeping Jimmy Butler and not going for Harden and these little margin, not going for Kyle Lowry, these little margin things that just the Josh Richardson,
Mike contract, trading him.
Yeah.
Hiring Doc Rivers before you hire Daryl Morey. There's lots of problems. So, Thunder trade you threw out, I think that's definitely not enough for Philly, just in my opinion. However, the Thunder have so many picks that they could just rejuice it with picks if they wanted to. I think one potential trade that could make sense, and most people are going to hate this probably, but if I'm Portland, I'm offering McCollum in Covington, and you might need to throw one other salary to match it there.
I think that's the most popular idea I've seen.
Now, McCollum obviously is overpaid. He's not nearly as good as Simmons. And honestly, on face value, Philly loses that trade, trading Simmons for McCollum and Covington, I think. But McCollum was actually a killer at the start of this season, before he got hurt.
Yeah.
He's low-key old. I think he turned 30 this year. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's not an amazing trade for Philly. I don't think Philly can win a Simmons trade this offseason.
That's the thing. You can't. You can't win a trade trading a 25 or under all-star level player. Unless you're packaging them for James Harden or something like that.
Yeah, they need to get someone ready made. That's the issue with the Bulls. The Bulls obviously they're not trading Zach and Vooch. Who are you trading to Philly where it makes sense for them? Where they're trying to contend with Embiid and their roster. So that's why a Bulls trade probably will not happen, because the Bulls are not going to trade Zach for him, but the Sixers aren't going to take. Patrick Williams and salary filler and maybe another first.
Bad.
That's just not good for the Sixers at all. They could definitely find something better out there. And the Portland one, I feel like it's the most popular one I've seen out there.
I think
I've seen the Kemba one as well. So that does, I think, make kind of sense. So with what they need a guard who can get buckets, can score in the half court. And CJ was really good at the start of the season. And with the Blazers, Simmons and Lillard, they need the defensive improvement. It makes some sense there. So, both teams looking to shake things up.
I'd fucking do that in a second if I'm Portland.
It seems like the obvious one.
CJ, first class, ship him to Philly, give me Simmons. If I'm Portland, I'm doing that in a heartbeat.
The thing with that trade is that the Sixers still lose it, but I think the fan response would be good because they'd get Covington, and they love Covington.
They do. Process legend.
That's why I included Covington in this. Yeah. And then the only other one I think that might make some sense, and of course I've been talking about him on this podcast, I think, in my opinion, one of the more underrated players in the league. Now maybe an injury concern, though. So how does he project moving forward? Malcolm Brogdon. Indiana can't get a player of Ben Simmons' stature via free agency. So why not potentially try to swing this trade for him? They could throw in TJ Warren. They could throw in Brogdon. Do you want, Miles Turner, take him? Who cares? If I'm Indiana, maybe I would, I think I would really try to get Ben Simmons.
You know, it's funny. You were talking about an underrated guard with injury problems, and I thought you were going to mention Derek White. And now I'm like, what if there's like Derek White and DeRozan?
Thought about that too. Thought
DeRozan in Philly would be killer. That's like,
he doesn't defend enough, but maybe it doesn't matter with Embiid there.
I mean, the half court offense,
you get him solely for the playoffs.
They need half court scoring. Their offensive rating, I mean, they couldn't score against like these Hawks lineups. Then they're running out Trey, like Lou Will, Gallo, Kevin Herter, like, and they couldn't score against these guys. Like, that's fucking brutal.
Yeah. Okongwu kind of beat the shit out of them.
I was surprised, but
I'm a huge Okongwu guy, but like, you should not be getting run off the court with a rookie, a 6'8.5", 6'9" rookie center who just beat Dwight Howard's ass for seven games.
Dwight was bad. Thibault was awful. That's series terrible. It's multiple bad fouls.
Yeah. It was awful. That's what he does. Thibault's cool, but like, he's not, you know what really, it's why I don't think I actually wouldn't be that surprised if they didn't make any drastic moves, is because they lost that series because Danny Green got hurt.
Yeah.
Like, Danny Green's healthy. He's on Herter. Herter does not have, what, 27 points. He doesn't, maybe he has like 15, but that doesn't happen.
Yeah. But if Atlanta is DeAndre Hunter.
True.
Yeah. But DeAndre, I mean, okay. DeAndre is not, didn't get hurt. DeAndre is injured. Like, this is what DeAndre is now. Danny Green got hurt. Like, it was kind of a freak injury. Like, it's not something that happens to him that often. So, yeah, I think it's probably wise to not overreact, but they probably will.
Yeah,
like, it's just what's going to happen.
Well, we'll see how that plays out. We should transition to the draft. So, lottery is tomorrow night. We're not going to make this podcast dated. This podcast, you'll be able to listen to it after lottery too. But I do want to talk about the hypothetical of the Bulls possibly getting in the top four. So the Bulls have whatever, like a 20.6% chance or whatever it is.
20.3. You'll get it next time.
Top four. I'll get it at some point. I don't think it's going to happen, quite frankly. So I haven't really been concerning myself with it. But let's say the Bulls get the first pick in the draft.
That's 4.5% chance.
Jay draft, 4.5%.
That's a larger chance than they had for Rose.
It is.
I want to go just over, great point. I just want to go over every, who you would take at every slot. So number one, this can be quick. I think we're going to agree on this one. With the first pick in the draft, Cade Cunningham.
You take Cade.
I feel like Cade would solve almost all the troubles the Bulls. The Bulls need a player who is exactly like Cade Cunningham.
If they got number one pick and took Cade, they would be, depending on injuries to other teams, they would be in contention to make the Eastern Conference Finals next year.
Wow. A huge
investment. So I guess just
they would at least be a competitive second round team.
Okay, so who, I guess just going in that, you think he'll be that good that quick?
It's not even someone said he'll be that good. It's just if he is next to LaVine, that solves a lot of the once in a while problems he had. Like, I don't put any stock into that Oregon State game where they were they literally, like, two guys would grab one guy and throw them at him. It's like, that's fine. Anyone who has any real concerns about Cade's score should watch that Baylor game in the Big 12 tournament. Did you know that he beat them basically by himself? He beat Baylor, the team that destroyed Gonzaga. They only lost twice, and one of the other loss was like 2 days after they all had COVID. So, like, yeah, no, Cade won that game, not single-handedly, but about as single-handedly as you can win a basketball game.
That might have been the most impressive game for a draft prospect in this cycle. There's certainly a few Mobley games you could go off of. There's a couple other
Suggs
games.
Against Iowa was up there.
There's Suggs against a few teams, but I thought that game against Baylor was just unbelievable. But here's my Cade question for you. We're going to play this game, Brian J. Draft. I'm curious where you think Cade rates historically compared to other recent number one overall draft picks. And this is hard to do given the information you have on these other guys now, but I'm going to name a guy and you're going to tell me if you can just try to remember as a prospect, because you've been in the game for a long time. If you think that, you know, Cade is a stronger prospect than this guy who went number one overall. Let me see. Where do I want to start off with here? I feel like I had a good one. Oh, Karl Anthony Towns. Would you?
Yes.
You take.
He has the ball more. That's always my. If I'm ever toss up between two players, I always go with whoever will have the ball, like, in creation situations more.
Sure.
Bring the ball up, go around screens, whoever does the what Devin Booker was doing yesterday, basically.
Yeah.
So then obviously Ben Simmons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cade. Right.
Yeah. It's still relatively close. Like Simmons was an awesome prospect.
Fultz.
Yeah.
Cade of Fultz.
Yeah. Prospect Fultz was good, but it was even then kind of a weaker number one.
I was all in on Prospect Fultz.
He was awesome. He was definitely the number one guy.
Prospect Fultz. I thought he was an absolute killer. I saw him play at DeMatha. They played at the UIC Pavilion, and I went to cover that.
Oh, man.
I wrote UIC a couple Pavilion. Long stories on it at SB Nation, and he was a killer. DeAndre Ayton.
Yes. Same reasoning as Towns.
Zion Williamson.
No.
And then Luka Doncic, who didn't go number one, but...
No, I think I talked about this. I think they're pretty similar, like more similar than I think I thought we'd get for a Luka comp. I think the difference is that Luka has it's sometimes to his detriment, but Luka has absolutely no like risk. He never in his brain is like, oh, that's a risk. I shouldn't do that. He just does it. It's completely instinctual. Whereas like Cade will sometimes pull back on stuff he maybe should take or maybe could take. He got a lot better at it as he was basically forced into being extremely prolific scorer by the complete offensive inability of it. Like none of his teammates could score on their own except for Avery Anderson. And you know, he had his backcourt mate was like standing in the paint for 40% of their plays. Cause Isaac Likely doesn't shoot. He's a center basically. But even then I do think Cade sometimes doesn't quite have that like insane confidence that Luka has as like a scorer, and that can win you games, you know.
For sure.
We're seeing it in these playoffs. Right,
yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I guess my question was going to be then, if the Bulls did get number one, who would you trade that for?
It would be hard. I got a question for Brian. Brian, would you trade that first pick
for Shea?
For Shea?
No. No.
No.
You would take Cade. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd be a little tempted to go Shea. I think what would separate Cade maybe though is, well, first of all, just like you have him on 4 years of a rookie contract.
Yeah.
Second of all, I think that, you know, it's a big part of Cade's appeal, which I think does not get enough attention, is his defense. And I think like having
terrific.
A guy who can be like a really solid defensive player, both on the perimeter and near the rim, it's just like a big body would be awesome. Like he can defend threes and fours.
He played center defensively for them. Like a lot when they only really had two. Matthew Alexander Moncrief did sometimes, but he fouls everybody. Who's the other big, the other Kuma, or he fouled everybody. Like all their bigs fouled all the time. The Boone twins either foul everybody or were, you know, they're like 190 pounds. Like they're not really centers. So he played center defensively a lot. He's like 230. Yeah. Cade is defensively like, as ready to go as any number one pick in recent memory, except Anthony Davis, because he doesn't count.
Then let's move to the second pick. Bulls have the second pick. I have a clear choice on this one. I think that you're going to pick the same choice, but maybe it's a little interesting just given the Bulls' current roster construction. If you got the second pick, you're taking Brian.
I'm taking Mobley still. I think Mobley is one of the best defensive prospects that's ever come along in the history of basketball.
But. So I'm doing the Let's Watch Film with our mutual friend, PD Webb. We're doing Mobley on Wednesday. I feel super honored that he asked me to do it. I think that he could have asked someone smarter, but I'm going to do my best. And I watched a full game. I watched the Arizona game and I took notes on it. I love Mobley. In that game, it was a little underwhelming. I felt like it showed some of his weaknesses as a player. I think he does have some pretty serious strength limitations. And sometimes I think one thing I'm thinking lately is that sometimes the most obvious thing that could swing someone's draft status really is the thing that does it. Whereas like when you watch so much film, you get some Stockholm syndrome, you really start analyzing deep, deep, deep into the player's issues. But like Evan Mobley is going to have to get stronger. Do you think he can play the four, Brian?
Yes. Yes. I have almost no doubts about that. He's a good ball handler. Like, not even for size, but he's a good ball handler, like, on the broad spectrum of basketball players.
What really stood out to me watching that game from his ball handling perspective is that he can go right or left without any problem. Julius Randle can't do that, and he's second-team All-NBA.
the thing with Mobley's defense too is it's, the strength is an issue, but like, unlike say Jaren, and I hate to say this, he doesn't over foul to compensate.
Jaren fouls everybody.
Like Mobley does not foul. It's and like, it's not even like in the college sense of like, you know, like Draymond didn't foul because he was like punch people in the kidney or whatever. Or Stephen Adams is a guy like that. Like, Mobley does not make contact with people, but he still blocks their shots and still like forces misses. It's remarkable.
So if the Bulls were to draft Mobley, get number two draft Mobley, does he slot in just like as the starting four right away? Like just the fit with Vucevic?
It is a little odd, but I still take him. Yeah.
Okay. I was wondering, like, would that be a better situation where maybe you look to trade that for someone who would prefer the young big man and try to get somebody more?
Maybe I trade that pick for Shea, but I don't think they do that.
I don't think so. Yeah, interesting.
I would probably trade that pick for Shea for sure, but I love Mobley. You check out PD's stream if you want to hear us gush about Mobley. Probably. I'm interested to see what PD's going to say, but I think that
he's Mobley a big Mobley guy.
Is absolutely worthy of taking number one overall in most drafts. Like, I would have taken him number one overall last year over LaMelo, and I was really high on LaMelo.
I've been thinking about that. I would say probably. I could go back and forth, but yeah, I would say probably. Definitely over Anthony Edwards. Who was awesome. Who was awesome. Like,
yeah, Anthony Edwards for sure. And speaking of Anthony Edwards, I think Jalen Green's got a lot of Anthony Edwards comps. Maybe we're not going to get to him yet because we're going to talk about the third pick here. Third pick, really interesting. I think Jalen Green really impressed me in the G League. Jalen Green, kind of awesome. He's also pretty duplicative of Zach LaVine, just in terms of skill set, in terms of body build. I think Jalen Green was getting hyped from the time he was like 15 years old as the next Kobe. Well, being the next Zach LaVine doesn't sound as good. It might not be the same marketing ploy, but if the team that drafts Jalen Green, if he ends up as good as Zach LaVine, I think that they would be pretty happy with that outcome for the number three or number four overall pick.
Absolutely.
And then I think it's a toss-up between him and Suggs. Suggs, I think, is maybe not the player that people think he is in terms of like being a pure point guard.
Yes. But
I love Suggs as a complimentary guard. And here's my first Galaxy Brain draft take. You know how last year your boy, who you discovered, you found him somewhere in the world, Tyrese Halliburton. I wasn't really super high on Halliburton because I thought, well, this guy just can't be a point guard. Can't be a lead engine, can't be a point guard. So I don't know about him. But Halliburton finds himself on the Kings. The Kings have that engine in Fox. And it turns out Halliburton is just a totally badass, complete all-around complimentary guard. And though their bodies are totally different, their athletic packages are totally different, Suggs kind of reminds me of that. Where,
well, I still don't know if this is 100% confirmed. I think they might be related. My only real evidence for this is that I've seen several times that Suggs, he's Terrell Suggs' cousin, but he's also I've seen more than one place, like I think of Team USA site for the U19, which is like, that's pretty reliable. He's listed as Eddie Jones's cousin, and Tyrese Halliburton is Eddie Jones's cousin also. So I think they may be distantly related.
Cool.
And they've kind of wired the same as like passers. They're always like going for cool kill shot passes. Their bodies are like the exact opposite.
I just Googled this right now, and I see that they're close, that they're good friends. I'm not seeing related.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I know that they know each other, but and they came up through the same. And they're kind of from the same general area. I don't know if that's true. I just noticed that they were both listed as related to Eddie Jones, which feels like...
Well, I'm covering the combine this weekend, and I'm going to go up to Jalen Suggs and ask him.
There you go.
Yeah, because I've seen that now for like 2 years, and every time I notice it, I'm like, are they really? I don't... They might be distantly, but either way, they're pretty similar.
So like, third pick, you taking Suggs, you taking Suggs. Green, you're taking Suggs three for the Bulls.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised you said that, actually, but...
I have him three, so I should.
Okay. What's your thought process there?
Knowing the Bulls, the thing they need more than anything is someone who makes good decisions with the basketball in their hands, who isn't Zach LaVine, who doesn't always make good decisions, but can be trusted, I think, at this point to be make decent decisions. And that's what Suggs is. That's his best attribute. That and he plays like if he doesn't run 400 miles an hour, he will explode. Which is always fun. You always like those players.
He's the speed of draft prospects. Yeah. For sure.
And the defense is good. Like, yeah, I think he would immediately, unless they're going to play Dotson, like they need attack. They need an attacking guard. I don't think Dotson will be on the team next year because I imagine he's not happy about not being played for no reason, no discernible reason.
Gotta get Ryan Archiak in those minutes.
No disrespect, Arch. Get him out of here, man. There's no reason. Like, we know what he is. He's fine.
Exactly.
He's a worse Howell Neto. Like, that's, I have no room for that in my life. Arch will be fine. He has nice hair.
He does. Great bench celebrations too.
I think the reason I would entertain, honestly, that the real move might be the team that has four getting them to trade up. Getting something and just taking Suggs at four anyway.
For them to take Green, but what if they take Suggs? I feel like that is the toughest call in this draft, Suggs versus Green.
I feel like you don't trade up for Suggs, though. It's like, he's awesome. I like him a lot. But, like, yeah, as you said, he's not a very good dribbler. And that can improve. Like, Lillard got better at that. But he's also not a very good shooter. Is the problem.
His shooting is really bizarre because when he gets hot, he looks like a fucking killer. And his percentage was really high early in the year.
Yeah.
But then some of his misses are like wild misses. Like, if you ever play pickup with a guy and you know, they take a shot and they just like hit the corner of the backboard somehow on a three, and you're like, well, I'm not guarding that guy again. He'll like miss some shots that are like way, way, way off. He'll miss by like 2 feet.
That's what I call him, Michael Carter Williams.
I personally think it's a balance issue. Like, he's planning off different feet, or he's just like going up too fast. Like, he's just getting up to the top of his jump quicker than he expects. It's just kind of like, flings it. I really don't like, it should be fixable because his shot looks fine. There's nothing wrong with his shot. That's why it's Tony Snell syndrome, where like sometimes he just, when it goes in, I mean, it's different. Like, there's a guy in this draft who has the Tony Snell jump shot, Zaire Williams. When it goes in, you're like, how does this guy ever miss a shot? And when it misses, you're like, how does this guy ever hit a shot? God, this guy sucks. But the Tony Snell thing has always been fascinating to me because it's like
a weird
his percentages are awesome, but like, he's not a reliable shooter. It's really bizarre.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Anyway, nice fourth Tony pick. Snell. Nice
this Tony is where Snell. It gets interesting. Green on the board in this scenario, let's say. Green and Levine, very similar skill sets, both very skinny, both somewhat spotty decision makers, both could charitably be described as a bucket, a walking bucket. Part of me thinks maybe that would just be sick. Like, let Vucevic play point guard, have those two mega freak athletes who can score from all three levels just run around. Who gives a shit about defense anyway? We just saw Rudy Gobert get his ass exposed. We just saw Simmons get his ass exposed. Defense is for role players, and we got superstars in Jalen Green.
Buckets.
I mean, we got two next Kobes. How can you beat it?
Devin Booker's the next Kobe, bro.
I see on your big board, though, Brian, you got Springer 5, you got Moody 6, mm-hmm. you got Sharif 7. So you got some options here. And I see where you got my guy here, and I've been saving this take for a couple weeks, but I would consider Scotty Barnes for the Bulls at number 4 as well. I think he'd be a really good fit next to Levine and Vooch.
Yeah.
That he would be able to give you a lot of the play. He had a 32% assist rate.
Yeah.
We don't talk enough about that.
It's weird. It's weird that I have Scotty kind of low, and I it's really only because I don't like taking him. Like, anyone who's not the Warriors in the top six or seven, I just don't trust them to use him properly. The other thing is, I think Scotty is kind of has to be a big in the NBA. Cause like,
yeah,
he's not, it's weird because he is a good athlete. Like, he's probably going to test pretty well and he has weird measurables, but he like can't jump. Like
his biggest shortcoming as a player, everyone is going to say is his shot. If he could jump, I would have so much more faith in him as a small ball five option. As like, not being able to jump is a huge hindrance. Yeah. Like, Vucevic has been able to overcome it. Vucevic is extremely gravity bound. He cannot beat Earth's gravitational force.
Yeah.
The vast majority of the time. Scotty, very similar.
The weird thing is,
think about taking Scotty four over Jalen Green. I would think about it.
I would trade back if I was going to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, me personally, and hey, it's not my job. I'm not going to get fired. I would figure out who wants Sharif, and I would trade back to the pick right before them, and I would take Sharif. Fuck it. That's what we need.
Sharif rules. I'm high on Sharif, too. I'm going to say you're the preeminent Sharif
guy. I am the Sharif guy. I defy anyone to be more of the Sharif guy than I am. He is one of my favorite players I have ever watched play basketball. Despite his huge and obvious flaws that made, in fact,
I don't know much about him. I'm looking at your scouting report here, and this 3-point percentage looks atrocious.
You said his shot is almost, it's the textbook I've never had to shoot before shot. Like, it's awful. It's so bad that, like, it's honestly, I have like, his form is so weird that I actually have some confidence that whatever NBA team he goes to is just going to completely redo it. He'll end up being like a 31%, 32% shooter and be like, fine. He's a good foul shooter, is the thing.
Yeah, I did notice that. So that's always like a nice sign, at least. I just scarred by Chris Dunn. Was just how
this is very different, very, very different.
Totally different from Chris Dunn. Yeah.
The thing with Sharif that's really fascinating is, despite that, and despite not coming into the NCAA until midway through the season and jumping right into the SEC, he still got into the paint on literally every possession.
He led the country to assist rate. 52% assist rate.
8.8 assists per game is fucking great.
He's the second player since 2008 to have a season of 50 assist percentage and 50 free throw rate. The other one is Ja Morant. And like, he's not that kind of athlete, but Sharif is maybe the most technically skilled passer I've ever seen play. Like, since like Magic. Like, I'm not even, maybe LaMelo's up there and maybe Halliburton's up there, but like, the technique he has on his passes is absurd. It's way beyond anything Lonzo Ball was ever doing in college. It's like his ability to manipulate the basketball with either hand. It's insane. It's such a power. It's such an advantage that it's like off the chart. And that, and his dribbling and like his just general, he's cool. That's the other thing about Sharif. He's cool to watch play basketball. If anyone can overcome the height, like, you know, there's a cliff after, once you get under 6'3", you got to have elite skills to make in the NBA. But like, if there's anyone aside from Isaiah Thomas in the last 15 years who could do it, it's him. He's not Tyler Ulis. Like, he's he's like 2.5-3 inches taller than Tyler Ulis. Tyler Ulis is tiny, but yeah, I would be, it's why I wouldn't take Sharif at 4 or 5. Cause I think if he busts, you're done. But like the Bulls, especially if they can get in, if he gets into like the teens and some team wants Lowry and they're just not, I would pull the trigger so fast. Because if he hits, he is your star guard. He's Chris Paul, basically. He's your Chris Paul. He's not going to be as good defensively, but you know.
You got to think that this Trey run in the postseason, mm-hmm. I think he's got a lot of similarities to Trey. I mean, the obvious difference is that Trey, for all of his next Steph Curry compliments, Trey is a good shooter. Trey is not a historically good shooter, but he is a good enough shooter where you definitely have to respect the fuck out of his jumper, which opens up the rest of his game. Trey also masterful on the floater. Cooper, I haven't really seen too much.
He hasn't had to use it, is a thing.
Yeah.
There are a few times. The other thing with him with the floater range, he'll get to floater range like on the pick and roll, and he'll kind of go up like he's going to do it. And then the big will kind of head over to him and he'll just like fire this like side hand bounce pass right to the big for a dunk. Or he'll do the thing that I've only literally ever seen him do, which is he throws a lot of passes into the interior. He throws them up towards the rim, so the guy who catches it doesn't have to load up and score again. And like he only does that for some guys. He didn't do it for JT Thor or like Devin Cambridge or like these super athletes. He did it for the big floorbound guys he has on his team because he knows that if they take a second to like put the ball down, they might lose it. It's a remarkable, like, the only way to describe Sharif is that he has a button on his hand that it just says make offense, do offense good. And he just hits it whenever he wants. And he just creates scoring opportunities for people out of literally nothing. I've never seen this is the fourth draft I've been doing this, like, seriously, no one's even close. Trey is probably the closest. And even then, Trey, because of his shooting selection, sometimes misses those. Sharif is, I guess he can get tunnel vision on occasion, but that happens with all guards. Guards can get tunnel vision. That's not a thing you really worry about.
And if you're worried about his scoring, he proved during his short time in the NCAA that he has learned the dark art of drawing fouls. Against Mizzou this year, he went 18 of 21 from the foul line.
They put in a big, huge, I think Jordan Wilmore is his name. They put in like a huge guy to try and deter him from the rim. And all Sharif did was just, like, you know how Chris Paul was hunting Michael Porter? He just did that for like five possessions and they immediately took him out. It was embarrassing. And this was like his fifth or sixth game. Let me look up, because his first college game that he ever played was against Alabama, the best team in the SEC. And he went nuts. He was insane. Like, they couldn't stop him. He's a remarkable basketball player. He could end up not being, I mean, I think worst case, he's going to be a backup point guard for a long time, but like, yeah, 8 for 19. Yeah. 26 points, 9 rebounds, 3 steals, or 26 points, 9 assists, four rebounds, 3 steals, 5 turnovers in 32 minutes against a top 5 team in the country in his first ever college game. Like, he just was, it's different.
And then defensively, so I think that, you know, it deserves to be a worry, obviously.
Yeah.
When Trey was in the draft, one thing everyone was constantly saying about Trey was, well, in the playoffs, when the game slows down, people are going to find him, target him, smoke him. Well, guess what? Trey Young just led his team to 2 straight series victories, and no one could fucking take advantage of him. Now, I assume he's going to be guarding PJ Tucker, right? Probably in the Milwaukee series? Yeah. I don't know. But it's sort of hard to have a team that has enough guys with dribble, pass, shoot skill sets who can punish you. So one thing I was going to ask you is, if the Bulls did keep that 8th pick, if they didn't trade it for Vooch, let's say that Vooch is still on the team, but they just traded future shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had the 8th pick. Now I assume you would want Sharif.
Yeah, maybe Springer I look at, but.
Yeah,
they have such a need for a point guard. Like, people say you need at point guard, but they have a guard they can rely on. They don't have a point guard. Like, that's not Kobe. We know that. It's not Zach. I mean, Zach is probably the best side on the team. Or Thaddeus Young. It's not like, I'm sure you would see a lot of Davion Mitchell. I'm good. Like, Davion's awesome. I have respect for him. He plays hard. He's a good basketball player. Like, he's fast. The shot is okay. I'm going to say this to scare off Bulls fans from him, even though there's no way he ends up on the team. Do you know who the last guy I can remember who went from like a 30%, 32% three-point shooter as a junior to like a 40% as a senior was? It was Chandler Hutchinson. Didn't work out. You cannot bank on a 21, 22-year-old suddenly becoming an elite three-point shooter. It doesn't happen.
He did it on high volume. I don't know. Yeah, like,
I think he's a good three-point shooter. Like, I think he'll hit open threes, but people are acting like he's going to be like, people think he's Donovan Mitchell. That's what it is.
Right. And similar to Mitchell, he's fucking small. He's like the smallest and the oldest player. And I, like, he might be smaller than Sharif. He's obviously more of a power athlete, but I guess Sharif is probably plays smaller.
I would say Davion's a little bigger. They did play each other. I would say he's a little bigger, but. Sharif made him look like an absolute fucking fool in the first possession they played against each other this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just like came down the center of the court and Davion tried to step up and he just did like a Blake Griffin spin right around him and threw an offhand lob in the same motion. Davion just stood there like, what? Then they kind of kicked Sharif's ass the rest of that game, but that's Baylor again.
That's Bam.
One,
everyone's ass.
one guy, one college basketball player got the better of them all year, so.
So I've already said that, you know, Barnes would be, I think, a great pick for the Bulls. If they could somehow get him, I would consider him at four. The other guy who I would kind of like on the Bulls, and he's very much a hot button issue guy within the draft community, I think, is Jalen Johnson. And similarly, the more I watch Jalen Johnson, the more I look at Jalen Johnson, I'm like, is this guy's defense way underrated? Like, I think Jalen Johnson could be pretty sick defensively.
Yeah. The flexibility worries me. Like, he can't really, he kind of has Lonzo Ball, like the action figure legs sometimes. Like, he doesn't turn and like push off. And maybe he's just not playing that hard because he has motor issues too. But like, if they, yeah, if they had eight, or even if they, let's say they trade Lowry for 16 or something, I'd take
can I call that in?
Yeah. Right, take a big swing on Jalen Johnson.
I trade Lowry for 29 or something, I would do that too.
It's funny that I did that last year.
You were on this last year.
And I had them taking Devon Dotson, and people were like, terrible value. I was like, I would do that shit immediately. Are you kidding me? Lowry sucks. And everyone was like, no, it's too early. You have to give him a chance. And it's like, nah, man.
No, you were right on that, dude. When you said that, I remember thinking, nah, I wouldn't do that. You can't trade him for a late first rounder. Who cares about a late first rounder? 1 year later, I would absolutely trade Lowry for a pick in the late 20s.
I'll fucking take anything from him at this point. Jesus.
Yeah, man, Jalen, I guess the upside play for Jalen Johnson, this is kind of wrapping back around, is it kind of a Ben Simmonsy player? Like,
right.
He's huge. He's legitimately a good passer. He runs the break well. He's just big. Like, he gets a lot of rebounds. He just looks different playing out there. And like Ben Simmons, there are quote unquote character concerns, which for me just means that he smokes a lot. But he also just, like, I don't know. I don't put much stock in him quitting on that Duke team, because that Duke team sucks. It was a bad team. Like, he was not having fun.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I don't know. He was dealing with like foot stuff all year. Like, he kept getting hurt in his lower body. Like, whoa, why is he going to come there and play 35 minutes a game for a team that's going to like make the NIT? Like, who gives a shit?
But yeah, I was going to mention the Simmons comp with him too.
It's obvious. And, it's obvious.
In, you know, the bigger question than like, you know, the character concerns or whatever, to me is just like, how does he fit into a half court offense? Because I don't really know. And I do think that you're right about just like, you know, the lack of flexibility, or however you want to call it, because it seems like, you know, he's a good athlete. He has good vertical pop, but he doesn't really play like a power athlete the way Simmons very much does play like a power athlete.
I'm going to start calling that James Wiseman disease, because it's, if you put Wiseman, and this happened a lot, this happened a few times in Memphis, if he put him at half court and let him run in the straight line, he's terrifying. Like, he looks like the greatest athlete that's ever played basketball. Ask him to like navigate around a screen, he falls over and looks like an idiot. Like, it's not even like, it's just the way people's hips and knees work. And Wiseman could probably improve at that stuff. You can get better at that stuff. That's kind of a misnomer. Like, you can improve your flexibility in your hips and your ankles and your knees with pretty basic workout routines. And most NBA teams will do that. But it is, you are starting from like the tool. And this is the thing Mike Gribanov always talks about. Like, tools are important with big men, and Jalen is kind of a 3-4-5 hybrid kind of guy, kind of like Scotty. But he will be playing. He would be playing in the front court a lot, like in the NBA, and like, he has good tools, so that's good for him. But like, it's one of the reasons I'm not a big Operin Şengün guy, because like, he just doesn't have tools. It's important. Like, you need to have it, because how many big men, like Brook Lopez is going to get. I love Brook. He's going to have some bad times against Trae Young in this next series.
Yeah, and Brook also
has to play drop with him.
In a sense that he's fucking huge.
Yeah.
He's a giant in the set, in a way that, you know, Şengün isn't. So,
yeah.
I want to talk about 38, because the Bulls do have 38 for sure. I feel
unless
like...
Unless they sell it.
Unless they sell it.
Sell it for cash considerations, baby.
Well... I feel like there's no better guest to have on to ask about who the Bulls should take with the number 38 overall pick in the NBA draft than Brian. Mm-hmm. So I got some takes on who I would like them to draft. But, you know, is there one guy you would favor with that pick? And then you could rattle off a couple other names.
JT Thor. Okay. If he makes it there, immediately take JT Thor. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
Give us the sales pitch on Thor.
Remember what we thought Thon Maker was? That's probably what he is. He's just a ridiculous athlete and like a mover, like a flexible, like he does Euro steps, all this crazy shit as a 6'10", 18 year old. He shot 29% from three, but if you watch any Auburn game, he was taking like step backs, going around screens. He had, when Sharif was playing, he shot, I think 34.5% from three. And when Sharif didn't play, he shot like 22% because he couldn't get good looks. But like, yeah, he's the kind of guy, like 6'9", 6'10", shooter, athlete, dunker, Christian Wood type, is like, you swing on that. I think anyone outside the lottery should be prioritizing that guy, because if he works out, you get incredible value.
Is he definitely in?
Yeah, no, he's in.
He's fully in. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's been official yet, but I can say that he's getting good feedback from the NBA because he's a 6'10" guy who shoots step back threes. and he just turned 19, or he's about to turn 19. So like, yeah, you go for that guy. He may not even end up being good, but you always take that swing. If you're not a good team, like if you're like the Nuggets or, you know, someone who just needs like a couple wings, then you take like the Desmond Dane, Chris Duarte kind of guy who can just come in and immediately play. But if you're not a contender, like you got to keep swinging. You can never have enough stars. Kai Jones is kind of like that too, but Kai Jones is not going to be at 38. So
one guy I was going to name was Rocco.
Yeah, there's no, he's not making it there.
No.
I'd be amazed if he did. But yeah, he's awesome.
Okay. And then the name I was going to say for my 38th pick, and it's not as enticing as JT Thor, a little more one-dimensional, but I think this guy's going to be a pretty good player, is Kessler Edwards.
He will make it. I'd be amazed if he made it there.
He'd be the guy I would want at 38.
Yeah.
Wing shooter out of Pepperdine. Long, good defensive prospect. Has a funky release on his jumper, but the numbers back up the fact that he's got sick touch out to about 24 feet, 25 feet.
And it's off the dribble. So for like the form is not that as important. Like he can shoot off the dribble. So it's not as big a concern to me.
Other guys, would you take, I mean, I know you got him high. I would like this pick too, if they could get him at 38, give us the sales pitch on Bones Highland out of ECU.
The shooting just like, way outlier shooting. He took almost 14 threes per 100 possessions, shot 37-ish% on them, 80 high 80s foul shooter, and he's shooting 37% on like Steph Curry college shots. Do you remember Steph Curry college shots? This guy is hitting like he's the most streetball player in this draft. Some people might say Cam Thomas is kind of a foul hunter. Cam Thomas plays like a boring Ben Gordon to me, which is, you know, that's probably the role. Like Cam Thomas could be a Dark Horse Rookie of the Year candidate if he goes to a team that needs bench scoring. Like he can score, it's all he does, but he can score. But Bones strings together like these wild 6-7-8 dribble step back moves. Like Bones is an insane nuclear shooter. There's a video of him when he was like 15, I want to say 15 or 16 in Wilmington. He was It's called Bones Highland Destroys Philly Trash Talkers. And it's just two guys who are talking shit. And they're playing on a double rim and he hits like eight straight, like 30-foot threes. And it's like, this is like a 16-year-old. He's insane. And he's like pretty good at like, okay at defense. I think
he's like a skinny 6'3" guard.
Yeah. I mean, he goes by Bones. and it's not like a, you know, ironic nickname. I think he will almost certainly be like Seth Curry in the NBA at least, but like he's gotten a lot better. He just doesn't pass. Like he's not a very good passer, but he's become more of a dribble off the dribble, like rim attack guy. I think Bones is going to be awesome. I'm a big Bones. I'm a Bones believer. He's also just got like a great story. He's just an interesting person. He's had a lot of stuff.
He jumped out of a burning building and like sustained major leg injuries,
a patellar injury, which is why he went to VCU. Cause he basically didn't play till there was like, it was like March or April of the year he graduated. So he got like very, very late interest, like high major interest. I think Michigan was like kind of interested in him. And then VCU just were like, hey, do you want to come here and play a lot? And he was like, yeah, sure. I'm a huge Bones guy. I love him.
I got three other second round names for you. I want you to give me some quick takes on each of them. And if you would like them at 38, or if you think, hey, you could probably do a little better. Josh Primo.
You could probably do a little better.
I think Josh Primo's a really good, like, one thing that I've been like,
38, I guess, is like, fine. Go ahead.
He's just a good athlete. So I like his athletic tools. Like, if you in, I'm a big Moody guy. I would have wanted Moody if the Bulls were eight. But like when they played against, when, you know, it's just like Primo's just so much better of an athlete. I would take Moody because he's got length and shooting and pedigree and all these things. But Moody's pretty limited athletically just in terms of pop.
Yeah, yeah.
Primo can blow by you.
I just don't trust his, like, him putting his skill set together. I guess
he's not big. He's not too big either.
Yeah. The real selling point for a guy like that is he's extremely young. So
young.
38, I guess 38 is fine. I guess if like a Jared Butler type was still around, I would go with him though.
I like Jared Butler way more than that. I got Jared Butler at 20 in my mock draft that I'm
publishing. I'm in the low 20s for him too. He's a better basketball player than Davion Mitchell.
Yeah.
This is proven by 2 years of them playing together and Jared Butler being the best player on the team.
Another guy at 38, I would consider Isaiah Livers.
Sure. Maybe a little high for him, but I'm a big Livers guy. He at one point, before he like started getting hurt this year, he was a 57, 45, 97 guy. Like he's an amazing free throw shooter for a 6'7 guy. But he pretty much just is like 6'7, 235, play defense, shoot threes, get some rebounds. Like that. He's very, very simple player, but he has very obvious NBA roles. So yeah, sure. Go for Isaiah.
And last guy, I was big on this guy as, you know, a couple of years back and kind of forgot about him. Felt more and more impressed by him as this college season went on. Aaron Henry out of Michigan. Yeah,
that's probably who I would go with.
Give us, you know, what. So I like Henry because I think he's got some creation upside a little bit.
He kind of had to. He was forced into it by Michigan, by Rocket Watts not being very good. It's really what happened. Aaron Henry's an excellent perimeter defender. Can shoot a little, can create a little off the dribble, just kind of does a lot of stuff. He's just a good player.
Trust him defensively. Not huge, but he's like 6'6", 210 probably at least. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, especially if any of the guards I'd be into. Like, I'm a big David Johnson guy, despite him having a bad year.
Love David Johnson.
I think he just got kind of – they had Carlick Jones, and Carlick Jones is like the number one usage guy in college basketball. So I just think he kind of knew what he was doing. Deuce McBride, if he makes it there, I'm into Deuce. Is like a Javon Carter kind of guy.
He's small, but yeah, he's feisty. Small but feisty. And he can shoot.
He can shoot. He could. He's a pull-up shooter. Like I said, Butler, maybe Dacian Nix. You look at if there's no guards, if there's no one you think that could be a starting point guard, there's not that many of those guys. Yeah, Aaron Henry or Herb Jones, even like any kind of wing defender, please. Unless they're gonna play Troy Brown a lot, they need more. They need more anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been talking about, I guess, this is the last thing I got. And then, Jason, you can follow this up however you want to. But, you know, Jason and I have just been sort of doing our bullshit on this podcast about what the Bulls do in the offseason, who they should add. We're armchair GMing here. So, you know, what do you think would be some good moves for the Bulls, realistically? And sort of, I guess, what is sort of your mindset after post Vucevic trade, seeing a little bit of what they have with the team, where are you at right now? What do you think they should be focusing on? What do you think the next move is? Do you think they should go all out after the third star? Do you think they should do something else? Where's your mind right now with the Bulls? Awesome.
I don't think the Lonzo stuff's going to happen. I honestly, the biggest name I could really realistically see them going for, unless they, some weird shit happens where they can get Kyle Lowry, is Brogdon. I'd be willing to part with a good amount for Brogdon. I think he would help them a lot, but I really do think they kind of need to see what Patrick is like, see what they look like. You can wait to make that kind of trade until in season next year. Like in season trades are more prevalent than they used to be, I feel like.
Yeah, we've talked about Brogdon a good amount. And
I mean, he's an obvious fit.
The fit makes perfect sense. Obviously, the injury stuff has been a thing with him, but the fit is great. We talked about him. We talked about getting him, whatever, a couple of years ago when he left the Bucks. It would have been a great fit then too. So definitely it was the Pacers. Like, who the fuck knows what they're going to do? Like,
yeah,
with their roster this year. I mean, they're just fired their coach after one disastrous season. Like, I feel like they're probably going to split up Turner and Sabonis, and it's probably Turner that's going to go. They got TJ Warren coming back from injury. We'll see what they do with Brogdon. Like, I do wonder if that is a thing where they'll probably trade Turner. They'll see how it goes. They have LeVert now too, right? They kind of see how that plays out. And then maybe they look to blow it up if things just go south next season. Like, and maybe Brogdon would be available. I feel like I'd be surprised if they traded him this offseason, but maybe an in-season move like that could make some
sense. His value could go way down 12 months from now if that injury doesn't look better. So it might be in their best interest to trade him this offseason.
Maybe, yeah.
That a quad tear is, I think, what he had. That shit's scary.
Wait, Brogdon did?
Yeah.
Isn't that what he had?
That's what Oladipo had.
I don't think he had a tear. I think he just had injuries.
Yeah, he's just always got nagging stuff going on.
Oh, I thought he was... he had a torn left rectus femoris. What is that?
I have no idea. I think I totally missed that injury. Is that his season end because of that?
It's a quad. It's one of the four quadricep muscles in the human body. Yeah, he had a quad tear.
Oh, I think I totally fucking missed that.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
It happened, I think, maybe not this year, maybe before.
Was I say? I feel like he was just like hurting throughout a bunch of the season. And then he I thought he played in the they played two playing games, I think, right? Yeah, let's see that. I'm seeing this injury right now that you're talking about, Data. Some hamstring issues this season. Brogdon hamstring soreness. He might have played. I don't know when this injury was, but either way, he definitely is always have injury issues. But I mean, the fit would be really nice for them. So yeah, that would be interesting. I'm trying to have there even been any other Bulls rumors out there? I feel like since we talked last, like there really hasn't been much out there. It was like the Lonzo stuff with Brian brought up Lonzo. Like there's definitely going to be competition for Lonzo. Like we'll see if the Knicks go hard after him. And the Pelicans, I don't even know what the Pelicans are going to do. It's the Pelicans. They need a new coach. We got this weird Zion rumors already. So like, I don't know what's going on. What's going on with there? I'm curious to what they're going to do with that roster. Like, do you think they should keep? Do you think Zion and Ingram is viable as those two guys together?
It's a good question. Hanging over the franchise, right? I think hypothetically it should work, but Ingram doesn't really scale down well, and maybe it's somewhat similar to what we're seeing with PG right now, where it's just PG. I think feels a little more comfortable as the guy as opposed to the second banana, but that's weird, right? Because playing with other good players should make your life easier. And Ingram should get a lot of opportunities playing off Zion, but I don't have the numbers in front of me. I believe Ingram's shooting fell off a little bit this year. And Ingram definitely had he seemed ascendant last year, and this year very much fell back down to earth.
Just kind of stagnated.
Not a good year, got a little worse. So yeah, it's a big question, but I think Zion likes Ingram and Zion likes Lonzo, and their bigger problems are that stupid
Adams extension. Deal. Yeah, and then obviously Bledsoe is fucking trash.
And Bledsoe, and maybe they shouldn't have traded Drew.
I mean, they got a lot for him.
Now Zion wants to leave. So.
Yeah, true. I mean, maybe they use those assets to try to bring in somebody else better. I'd have no idea. With Adams, I don't know why they did that. That Adams, because that was just so unnecessary. Like, whatever, you get Adams in the trade, but why do you then turn around and give him that money? I don't really get that at all. But yeah, who knows?
Before we wrap this up, I want to get this from everyone on the record. Totally open Final Four right now in the NBA. We're going to start with Jason, then Brian can go. Give me your finals matchup pick and your champion with games.
Oh, man. I think I said in the last podcast that I'm rolling with my Suns. I guess I'll roll with my Bucks too. Those are my two fake teams, I guess, aside from the Bulls, the Bucks and Suns. I can't trust the Bucks, and I said this last time. I even though like the Nets were down Kyrie and were down Harden, or basically down Harden, he was a shell of himself. I still thought the Nets were going to win that game seven, and they almost fucking did. They were in Kevin Durant's front shoe away from winning that game. The Bucks should beat the Hawks just because they are way better, and like Giannis should be able to steamroll through them. But the Suns are just kicking ass right now, and like Booker, I mean, just an absolute clinic in game one against the Clippers. Who knows when Kawhi's going to be back. We'll see when Chris Paul, if he's going to be back at all. We'll see about Chris Paul. It sounds like Chris Paul's doing okay. So like I'll roll with the Suns over the Clippers because I've just been rolling with them all playoffs. So I'm thinking Suns, Bucks, and I'm just going to roll with the Suns. It'd be a lot of fun for them to win. Even though I feel like the Bucks should win, I just can't trust them.
What are you thinking, Brian? Final four, finals pick, and then title winner.
Suns, Bucks also, and that's Suns in six. The coaching matchup there is
Bud is
unbelievably one-sided. Yeah. that's a huge gap. If the Bucks could somehow break the CBA and fly Rick Carlisle in, like have him drop from the ceiling like Sting, then maybe you get something. But yeah, I would say Suns, Bucks. Unless Kawhi comes back miraculously, I just don't think the Clippers have enough. I want to say Reggie Jackson can't keep shooting like this, but
maybe he will. Unbelievable.
Reggie Jackson has been awesome.
Every dude, game.
By the way, I'm going to say this now. I like Reggie Jackson. I've liked him for a long time. One of the reasons the Vooch trade, I think, is good, even if they don't, they're probably not going to give Reggie Jackson the 5 years, $100 million he might be getting now.
That's true. We've been talking about point guards. We have not really talked to Reggie Jackson. I keep getting reminded that he's, I believe, going to be a free agent. And he's definitely, some team is definitely going to overpay for him. He's in a pretty nice spot for himself right now. He's just hitting ridiculous shots all the time.
He's already a bad contract on his next contract. But what is truly remarkable about his performance beyond the shooting is the dribble penetration. No one can fucking stop him. And I get that Utah's perimeter defenders were both hurt, throughout that series. But he was in Mitchell, maybe just doesn't care about defense anymore. I used to be high on Mitchell's defensive projection. Obviously, Mitchell was hurt. Mitchell also averaged 3,200 points in that series. Mitchell was awesome in that series. But fuck, dude, Reggie Jackson was just the man going to
Reggie Jackson, Terrence Mann.
So I'm going to say the Bucks are going to win the title.
All right. Okay. Yeah. I just can't trust them. They should. They really, honestly, out of these teams, they should. They are the favorites according to odds. And they have Giannis, Middleton, and Drew, and Brooke Lopez, whatever. And it's just Bud. You can't trust Bud. I feel like you just can't trust this Bucks team to win at all. But they certainly could. And they probably should. Just the Suns have been kicking so much ass. So as long as CP3 comes back and they stay healthy, their starting lineup is fucking dope. Awesome. Campaign has been unbelievable. He started the game one slow, starting in place of Chris Paul, and then dude is just I can't believe how good he is. He still has his moments where he does dumb shit, but I did not see Campaign ever becoming this after
Cam and Dinwiddie are going to make a combined 20 to 30 million next year, and I hate it so much. And we're still stuck with Arturo Diacono, and Devon Dotson will go somewhere and be a really good backup point guard.
Absolutely nuts.
I'm done here, Jay.
I had my one last question. Ricky, we talked about this beforehand. I got back to the draft. I got to ask about my Illinois guys. Iota Sumu, Kofi Coburn.
Georgie.
What?
What about Georgie?
Oh, God. Georgie, my guy. Io, obviously, a bit higher, I think, for most people. I'm not a big draft guy, but
the production was the product. You can't fake that. He's a very good college basketball player. I just think it's big fish, small pond stuff. I think he kind of has to be. I guess he's big enough to be a 2-3 is being Damian Dotson really the outcome you want for that kind of guy? He will be drafted, and I actually wouldn't be that surprised if he's taken in the late 20s and has a decent career. Io's a good basketball player. He just, the level of commitment you have to give to a guy like that to give him the ball pretty much all the time. If you're doing that, you're a bad team. He's probably worse than if he was on the Thunder, I would rather give the ball to Ty Jerome because Ty Jerome's going to make passes. I don't know. Io, it's unfortunate because Io is cool. He's an excellent college basketball player. He will be a good, he will have a long career as a pro. He's a good basketball player, but I'm just kind of out. Like, the role he has to fulfill, it's the same thing. It's like, why are you drafting a backup center when you just go sign like a Kem Birch? It's like, I'm not drafting a third guard who doesn't shoot that well and kind of is like a ball dominant guy, but he is a good enough athlete that maybe he can kind of change his game around. But
so I've been thinking this for months, and I don't know if I ever tweeted it or put it in the, put it out there. And now everyone's going to think that I'm talking bullshit, but the guy who I have been galaxy braining this, like, what if Io could be Terrence Mann? They're both the same size.
Pretty much.
Io obviously was an on-ball player his entire career, and I totally agree with Brian's analysis that Io, his issue is that he doesn't seem to scale well as a role player.
Yes.
Right? Like, he's always been the guy with the ball his whole life. Well, he's not going to be good enough to be the guy with the ball in the NBA. Otherwise, he would have left after his freshman year. Stayed 3 years. But Mann was a second-round pick. They're the same size. Mann also couldn't shoot until his final year in college, and then he hit like 39% on low volume. So I want to see Io. I think he can defend multiple positions. I think Io's really improved his frame. I think that Io, from an NBA team's perspective, let's call him low maintenance. I think he'll be in the gym early. He's going to hit the weight room. He's going to be a good culture guy. Everyone's going to like him. I interviewed him for a big feature around March Madness, and he was a great interview. So maybe I'm a little biased now, which is
I mean, I've never heard anything negative about him as a person.
He's got a lot of similar attributes, maybe physically, maybe to Mann. And, you know, the real thing with Io is that if he's going to make it in the league, he's going to have to make it on the defensive end, I think. And his defense was not particularly impressive. Granted, he was carrying a large burden offensively. But yeah, I don't know. I've had this Terrence Mann thought in my head for literally 2 months.
I don't hate that. Terrence Mann was at least a part-time point guard in college, because he played at Florida State and they don't believe in point guards there. There's a part of me that wonders, this is very off topic, but Caleb Mills transferred there this year from Houston. And Caleb Mills is a pull-up shooter, dribble like point guard. I think it'd be really funny if Caleb Mills like becomes a superstar and Leonard Hamilton's like, oh wait, you can do that.
Caleb Mills and Matthew Cleveland next year. Florida State's gonna be fun. Florida State fun every year.
A big Matt Cleveland guy. I love Matt. And I guess, like, again, Io's tools are good enough that I think you can gamble on that. I was wrong last year with Jaden McDaniels because I just assumed that he would want to be Kevin Durant wherever he went, and then he decided to be like a defensive role player. He was kind of awesome for the Wolves. So maybe Io does that too, and he's awesome, and I'm wrong. But for now,
McDaniels is better tools, obviously.
Well, yeah, he's like, you know, 6'10".
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the only player I like less than the guy who's completely one-dimensional, unless it's just like something cool, like it's a guy who only does windmill dunks or something, like Tyrus Thomas.
Of course.
Is the guy who like has ancillary skills, but like because of the role they had in college, they've kind of forced them. They think that they're like they're going to be like a superstar player, and it's like you're just not doing that. It's the anti-Mikal Bridges, because Mikal knew exactly what he was and is that. And is one of the best fourth players in the NBA right now. That's the other thing I want to say real quick about Suns Bucks. Giannis is great. Giannis is awesome. I don't think Giannis can win a series where the rest of the top five best players in the series are on the other team, unless Middleton goes nuclear.
Dude, Middleton, you know what? No. I love Middleton. Middleton was heroic in that series. Holiday basically turned into fucking
Bledsoe.
He was Bledsoe on offense.
Drew Bledsoe.
Drew Bledsoe, former QB.
I mean, just going by matchups, like Drew has nothing for Chris Paul. We know that's just not stylistically, you can't guard him. I think Aiden would do criminal things to Brooke Lopez, like mobility, moving it. He would just run him off the floor.
Yeah.
And like Mikal on Middleton is a bad matchup for Middleton. Like Giannis would have to be putting up like 35 and 15 every game, which he could do. Like,
totally capable of doing it. He basically did it in the second round series from the second game on.
So the Giannis stuff is so funny. It's like, I feel like everyone shits out. Like the 3-point shots were terrible. And like so many people shit on him because like the decision making is so bad. And then you look at his numbers in the series and he put up ridiculous numbers.
You know what the reason for that is? I've said this 100 times. People still think he's a guard or a wing. Giannis is a center.
I wrote this a couple days ago, too.
Giannis is a center. He may be the best center in the NBA.
It's all because Jason Kidd made him a point guard in summer league.
I mean,
And it was a good idea at the time.
Yeah,
I'm not going to. Good idea at the time, but.
You'll never hear me say this again. I'm not going to blame Jason Kidd for that one.
It was a good idea at the time for such a young player. But also, if you look at, this has been, you know, publicized and talked about before, but Giannis's shooting form early in his career looked much, much better than it does now. And now, dude, I think the how long it takes him to
free throws
is just so fucking funny. I can't stop thinking about it.
He's too muscular is the thing. He works out too hard. He's become the most powerful man. Like, I love, we've kind of fixed the NBA height stuff. Like, they're reporting more accurate heights. They are not, still stop reporting. Like, LeBron was still at like 250. I was like, no, LeBron is like 300 pounds. Giannis is probably like 250 or 250. Like, Giannis is enormous. Like, shoulder, like, I saw him at Summer League when he wasn't playing in like 2015 or 16 walking around. I was like, that guy is huge. Like, he looked as big as Edie Tavares did.
I stood next to Giannis as well at the draft combine a couple of years ago, probably 2 years ago. He just walked in. I think his brother Kostas was there probably.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's like, I've been around basketball players. I've been lucky enough to do this, to be around basketball players up close. But that one is like, holy shit.
Yeah, I think All-Star last year, I think he walked by us down there. I was like, oh my, he is just a giant fucking person.
He has like a wrestler workout regimen. Like, he's a freak. I was going to call him the apex predator of the NBA, but that's actually probably Embiid, just like physically. Embiid is the only guy in the NBA who seems like he's taking things, like when he pushes people, he seems like he's not trying to kill. He's trying not to kill them. Like, yeah, that poor guy. He jeopardized his, he may have taken months or years, maybe even more than one season off of his career playing on that knee. And he had Ben Simmons passing up dunks. What the fuck are you doing? I don't want to like vilify somebody for maybe having like an actual mental, like just having like severe confidence issues. I mean, again, Bulls fans did that to Wendell for a year and a half, and he was obviously going through some bad shit. But like at the same time, it's like, you got just dunk the ball. Like, what are you doing? You got to dunk.
Right, man. And we've come full circle back to Ben Simmons. Yeah. Gotta love it.
Real quick, I want to say Kofi Coburn. No.
Yeah, I was gonna come back to Kofi. Like, do you think he'll get drafted?
Maybe, but he's just too big. I mean, Udoka Azubuike got taken in the first round last year, which was hilarious. Kofi's not bad. He's just too big. The true future NBA star on last year's Lillard team was, of course, Andre Curbelo.
Curbelo, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Once he gets that jumper down, hopefully. He's sick.
May have been the worst shooter, because I went through the shooting. He may be the worst shooter in my database, and I don't care. I love him.
Yeah, he's incredibly fun. He's gonna be an awesome fucking college player for.
I am so excited for him to have full reins of that offense.
Yeah,
Curbelo is one of my favorite players in the world because he's one of the only guys who plays basketball with the intent to embarrass people. Like, he wants people to be embarrassed.
Yeah, awesome. He's absolutely sick. Yeah,
he is. He's the professor from Ed One.
Yeah. All right. Oh, let's wrap it up here. Brian, thank you so much for joining us. As always, always love your draft stuff. Please give a shout out, pimp your work out there for us. You said a great thing.
All right, I'll pimp Brian's work for him since it's uncomfortable to promote your own work. Brian has a killer Patreon that I believe costs $1 a month.
It's whatever the minimum amount is. I have another tier too, but I don't really like stratifying that stuff.
Give Brian $1 a month is the thing he wrote today. Just alone on that, he did player rankings. How many players did you rank on that?
It's incredible volume.
Oh, I had to take a couple guys off, so it's 100 basically, but there's like 150 names on it, but the rest of it is just like, here's a list of guys, which is not really, that's not,
and
it's not
ranking. He does mocks, big boards, rankings. He'll give you some draft theory. So definitely subscribe to Brian's work on Patreon. If you're listening to this episode, if you made it this far, subscribe to that Patreon. And Brian, you also pop up every once in a while at other outlets.
Uprocks, yeah.
So very.
Yeah, whenever I feel like it or whenever they want me to do something. Hopefully, okay. more draft stuff though. That's kind of what I'm there for, is to do draft stuff. So. Yeah, you know, there's not a lot of call for that in February.
Yeah, draft season. We got the lottery again. That's tomorrow night. I believe that's like 7:30 Central, so it's 8:30 on ESPN. Then the draft is basically, I think, July 29th. So that's
July 29th.
Up. So it is draft season. So yeah, look out for Brian's stuff. Tons of great work, just in-depth. If you don't know much about the draft like me, I'll be reading all that stuff, all the other great draft stuff out there. So awesome. Thank you so much again for joining us, Brian. It's always a pleasure. Again, Bulls, 20.3% chance to keep this damn draft pick. We'll see if it happens. It would be very helpful for them in terms of their team building if they do keep that pick. 20.3% chance top four, 4.5% chance in the number one. So that's tomorrow night. Cross your fingers. I believe Mark Eversley will be the representative for the Bulls there.
Like it. I think he's got good vibes.
Yeah. Yeah. AK got lucky last year. They went up from 7 to 4 last year with AK. Now they're Eversley is getting that chance. So hopefully they can at least get to 4, maybe even higher. And we'll see. So that'll do it for us here at Cash Considerations. Thanks again to Brian for us here at Cash. Shout out to the Blue Wire Network, as always, with the lottery coming up, with draft season, and with the conference finals, the NBA finals coming up. Please go check out all the other great NBA podcasts across the network and all the other great podcasts. Tons of great stuff from Blue Wire Network. For us here at Cash Considerations, please let us know how we're doing. Please rate and review us wherever you listen to your pods. We're on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all those places. For me and Ricky, I'm at Bulls_J on Twitter. Ricky is at SB_Ricky. We will be back tomorrow night. We'll be doing a Spotify Green Room episode after the lottery. Ricky will have a mock draft coming out on SB Nation right after the lottery. And then we'll be hitting up Green Room. We'll be talking about if the Bulls keep this pick. If they don't, either way, we'll be on there talking. So please join us then. Until then, we'll talk to you guys next time. And thanks again to Brian for joining us. Take it easy, guys.